Well, how many of you have had the privilege of leading somebody to Christ? You've had that privilege. This relates to the message here in Romans 10, but I still remember the very first person I ever led to Christ. I was a freshman in college and would go out on Friday nights and would pass out tracts in Anderson, South Carolina. And we would go out a lot of times to like a grocery store complex. A grocery store is the main thing, and would go out and pass out tracts and try to engage people, you know, and you talk to people, and a lot of times people are busy, they got this or that, you know, they just don't have time to talk. But there was this one car that had pulled up, and I walked up to the car, and I don't know if the window was down or if I tapped or whatever, anyway, and a lady's inside and she rolls it down, and I don't remember my exact words, but I said, you know, good evening, I said, could I give you a gospel tract, and do you know you're going to heaven, or you know? Are you saved? I can't remember my exact wording. And she had a Bible in a car. And she said, you know, I carry this Bible in my car, and I'm reading it. And she says, what I don't know is how to be saved. And so I wasn't quite ready for that answer, and took her through the gospel, and she prayed to receive Christ. And then I was able to visit with a friend of mine. A couple of went by to visit her sometime later and see how she was doing. And I mention that because even in the passage that we're looking at, I want to start with, and then again, we're going to view this topically. You don't have to go around the world to find people in the situation of Romans 10:14. And Romans 10:14 uses the word they five times. How then shall they call on him in whom they have not believed? How shall they believe in him of whom they have not heard? How shall they hear without a preacher? And you've got people in here in Romans 10:14 who, without a preacher, they are not going to hear, they are not going to believe, they are not going to call. And you've got these people here in this verse that are not going to hear without a preacher. And in our class, seminary class, the last several days, we've been studying the doctrine of salvation. And one of the things that comes up in this doctrine is the issue about what about those who have never heard? And sometimes people have questions, honest questions about this. What about somebody who never had a chance to hear the gospel? What about somebody like that? Are they still as accountable before God? And you even have the textbook, maybe the main textbook we use for our theology classes here in the seminary, by Millard Erickson. In his second edition, he opens up the possibility of what if you have somebody, a devout pagan is the term that's often used. What if you have somebody, and you know, they don't know God, they don't know Jesus, but they follow the light they have, and they just cast themselves on the mercy of a God that they don't know. Like, what about them? Is it possible that maybe they could be saved just like that? And he doesn't really answer the question overly clear. He's a good theologian. But he opens the possibility of that. Well, he got some flack from kind of fellow evangelical brethren in his circles. And in his third edition, instead of backing off, he actually kind of plants his feet a little bit on this thing and makes that possibility a little bit more definite. And so I want to address that. I want to address that today. What about those who've never heard? And I want to give us a twofold biblical answer to this issue. And we're going to start in Romans 1. And Romans 1 gives us the first prong of this twofold biblical answer. And that is this, and we are going to be a little technical with the way we state this, but technically speaking, it is not true to talk about those who have never heard. Now, we all know what we mean. What we mean is those who have never heard the gospel. But technically, according to Scripture, everybody has heard some revelation of God. Everybody has exposure to things that God has made. And instead of embracing the revelation or the light that they have, the general pattern of mankind is to push that knowledge away. And I want to show us this in Romans chapter 1. And we just, 16 and 17 relates to the gospel of Christ. It's the power of God unto salvation. In it, verse 17, is the righteousness of God revealed. And then verse 18, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. And you think, wait a minute. I mean, so God's wrath is revealed against all ungodliness? I mean, what about the devout pagans? What about the people that have never heard? What about those that will never hear a gospel presentation? What about them? And the last part of the verse tells us really what the problem is and why God is angry with ungodliness everywhere. And it says this, who hold the truth in unrighteousness? And that word hold there, don't think of like to hold in the sense of like, you know, to hold a baby and hold it to yourself. Think of this as like to hold away from you. In fact, in my Bible, I wrote the word suppress. The idea here is to suppress, to hold away, to push away from you. And the story of humanity is actually, this is why God is rightly wrathful against all ungodliness, is that actually what's happened is truth that people could know, they actually push it away and they do so for unrighteous reasons. You say, well, what truth do they know that they push away? Well, this is verse 19. Because, here's your explanation, that which may be known of God is manifest in them. It's manifest to them. There's something knowable about God that should be clear to them, for God has showed it unto them. What are we talking about? What has God showed? Well, here it is. For the invisible things of Him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made. It's the things that are made that are should be a clear manifestation of some things about God, like His eternal power, that there is a God, that He exists, that should be clear. That should be known to them. In fact, to the point where they are without excuse. And of course, this makes us think of passages like Psalm 19, right? Where the heavens declare the glory of God, the firmament shows His handiwork. You got the sun that He put in the heavens and it goes from one side to the other and everybody sees the sun and they ought to see the sun and think, there's a God out there. Somebody put that in place. Or you've got passages like Acts 14 where it says, He left not Himself without witness and that He did good and gave us rain from heaven and fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness. That you ought to go out, even as a pagan farmer, so to speak, and you look at your field and you look how the rain comes down and the crops come up, and you ought to think to yourself, okay, somebody worked this system out. And they ought to think of God. But the general pattern of mankind is they push that knowledge of God away. They suppress it for unrighteous reasons. I think I've been in the Philippines. A pastor friend of mine is on a different island in the Bicol region there, but his island is very Roman Catholic, and the Lord has really used him there. He's got some good fruit. He was telling me a story of a lady that they had witnessed to, and she really, it was like she knew what they were saying was true. I mean, she wanted to believe the gospel. But here's the problem, is in her little area on that island, there was only one cemetery, and it was for Catholics. And she knew that if she received Christ and became a Christian, she could no longer be buried in that cemetery. And because of that, she pushed away what she knew to be true about Christ. This is exactly Romans 1. You push it away for unrighteous reasons. Well, what about those who follow the light they have? Is there anybody like that? I was in Bangladesh, and most of Bangladesh is Muslim. But on the hills and the hill areas, you have people from the different tribes, and they're mainly Buddhist. And I had one of these men in one of the classes I was teaching over there. And I remember asking, I said, so tell me, how did you get saved? I mean, you're, you know, from a Buddhist era. How'd you get saved? He said, well, he said, it was kind of like this. He said, I was in my village. And he said, one night I walked out of my house. And he said, I looked up at the sky. And he said, I thought to myself, there's got to be a God. Got to be somebody who did this. And he said, I forget the exact time. A while later, a missionary came to my village, preached the gospel, and I got saved. And you know, this is how it works. And that leads us to this, the second principle here that I wanted to talk about. So first, I go, what about those who've never heard? Number one is that there's a sense in which everybody has heard. I mean, everybody has available knowledge of God, but the general pattern of mankind is they push it away, and they do so for unrighteous reasons. You say, well, okay, but what about those who, you know, are there those who follow the light they have? And what about them? You know, what about these devout pagans? Can they, like, you know, cast themselves on a God that they don't know and end up saved? What about them? And when you read some of these theologies or some of these theologians, it makes you kind of think, I mean, almost sounds like there's nothing in the Bible that really talks about this. But the truth is, we've got illustrations of how this works. God is not silent even on this. And I want to show you three examples in the book of Acts. We're going to start in Acts chapter 8, and then go to Acts 16, and they're going to finish up actually on really one of the main examples of this. But Acts chapter 8, again, we've got clear examples of how this works. And it works something like this, that God, the pattern is that God gives more light to those who follow the light they have. And Acts chapter 8, you've got to sit, you've got Philip. Philip's the only man called an evangelist in Scripture. This is Philip the deacon, not the disciple. He's just been used of God in Samaria. Verse 27, we pick up the narrative here. Where, I guess, verse 26, the angel of the Lord redirects him to go toward the south. Verse 27, he arose and went, and behold, a man of Ethiopia, an eunuch of great authority under Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, who had the charge of all her treasure, and had come to Jerusalem for to worship. Go, wait a minute. I mean, don't you wish you had a backstory here? Like, okay, how did this guy, I mean, here's this African who travels to Jerusalem to worship the one true God, the God of the Jews. How did that happen? And we don't know. And even more than that, we find out from verse 30, or I guess verse 28, he's actually reading Isaiah. How did he get a copy of Isaiah? This would be handwritten. It might have been the whole thing. It may have been just a piece. How did he get this? I mean, he had money. I guess he's the treasurer. How did he get this thing? And he's reading it, and he doesn't understand it. So here's a man who comes to Jerusalem to worship the one true God. He cares enough to get a hold of a copy of the book of Isaiah, or a part of it, and he's reading it, and he's searching for truth. But here's what we can't miss. He's not saved. He's not safe. And he's not saved. And that's why God sends Philip. And Philip comes, and we pick it up. Verse 34, the eunuch has this question, who is this prophet talking about? And verse 35, then Philip opened his mouth. And he preaches Christ, and this man gets saved. And that's how God works. That those who are following by the grace of God, they're following the light they have, and God sends an obedient messenger, and they open their mouth, and they preach Christ, and that person gets saved. You've got another example. That's an African. Go over to Acts 16. Okay, here's another example of this. This is now Paul. Okay, there was Philip, now it's Paul. He's on a second missionary journey. He's been redirected away from Asia, away from Bithynia. He has now traveled to a place, verse 8, called Troas. He's on the edge of the Aegean Sea. He's come from back behind him from the east. He's been forbidden to go kind of south and a little back behind him. He's been forbidden to go up to Bithynia. He's at the edge of the land. And what does he do now? He gets this Macedonian vision, realizes God wants him to go over the Aegean Sea to the other side, to what we call modern day Greece. So he travels over there. He travels to Philippi, which is a city in the province of Macedonia. And verse 13, on the Sabbath, we went out of the city by a riverside where prayer was wont to be made. This is going to be a Jewish setting. On the Sabbath day, we sat down and spake unto the women which resorted thither, and a certain woman named Lydia, a seller of purple. So she's a businesswoman selling a very expensive color of clothing, or cloth, I should say, a seller of purple of the city of Thyatira. Oh, wait a minute, where's Thyatira? Thyatira is a city back in Asia. This is the place that God said you can't go. So he crosses over in obedience to Macedonia, and in Macedonia, there's a lady who's from Asia. Asia Minor. And it says this, which worshiped God. And literally, it's which worshiped the God. This is technical terminology for a proselyte. And again, you wish you had a backstory. Like, how did this lady get to this point? I mean, Asia Minor had plenty of gods. Some of the cities would almost fight or compete to be the center of emperor worship. This was their crowning jewel or joy of their city or town. There are plenty of gods for her to choose from. How does this lady, this businesswoman, maybe in the course of business is traveling, and somehow she ends up as a proselyte to the one true God of the Jews? How did that happen? And she goes out on Saturdays and she worships this one true God as this proselyte. But we can't miss this. She is not safe. And she is not saved. She's following the light that she has. And what does God do? Well, he sends messengers. And verse 14, which worship God, heard she heard us, whose heart the Lord opened, that she attended unto the things which were spoken of Paul. Paul speaks, he opens his mouth, he preaches the gospel, she believes, and she gets baptized. This is how God works. She's following the light that she has by the grace of God. God sends an obedient messenger and gives her more light. You've got one more example in the New Testament, and this is in Acts chapter 10. This is really the example of how this works. And again, it's not like God is silent on this issue. What about the devout pagan? God's laying out a pattern of how he works. So you've got this man, chapter 10 of Acts, this man Cornelius, he's in Caesarea. He's a centurion of the Italian band. And you've got this description in verse 2. He's a devout man. And he's one that feared God with all his house, which gave much alms to the people and prayed to God always. This is not your average centurion. And again, you wish you had a backstory. Like, okay, how did he come to this? Like, he gives money, he prays, he's had an impact on his family, he fears God. And he gets a vision, verse 3, and about the ninth hour, that'd be about 3 p.m. in the afternoon, an angel comes to him and tells him, okay, why don't you, the Lord has heard you, and so on. Verse 4, so send men to Joppa, call for Simon, whose surname is Peter. He's lodging with somebody else named Simon, who's a tanner. Okay, go to his house, and then look at this. Verse 6, he shall tell thee what thou oughtest to do. And then here, you know, here goes the story. They come and get Peter. Peter is not ready for this. There's about to be a divine appointment, but in between that, Peter has to get ready. God has to ready Peter for this. And then you have the vision there that comes down three times for Peter. And again, the messengers come and so on. Verse 22, I love this, the end of verse 22, and to hear words of thee. There it is again, to hear words. Now Peter eventually comes to Cornelius, verse 25. Cornelius met him and fell down at his feet and worshipped him. But Peter took him up saying, stand up, I myself also am a man. As he talked and he went in and found many that were come together. And then Peter goes on to explain something about the Jews and Gentiles and so on. And the verse 29, so I came to you. I ask therefore for what intent ye have sent for me. And Cornelius talks here in this verse here about fasting, praying. A man stood before me in bright clothing and said, Cornelius, thy prayer is heard. Thine alms are had in remembrance in the sight of God. Send to Joppa. Again, in verse 32, who when he cometh shall speak unto thee. And here's this man Cornelius, but we gotta get this. He is not saved. He fears God. He prays. He fasts. He gives money. He sees an angel in a vision. He's not saved. And Peter comes, verse 34, then Peter opened his mouth and Peter begins to preach to him. And I love what verse 14 of chapter 11 says. This is what Peter's retelling the event. But I love this. Who shall tell thee words whereby thou and all thy house shall be saved? I'm going to tell you words. And those words are going to save you. And again, this is how God works. God works by using an obedient messenger to give more light to those who follow the light they have. And you see this even in missions history. There's a story in a book by Don Richardson, Eternity in Their Hearts. It tells the story of a man named Warasa Wanga. And he's in Ethiopia. He's part of the Gedeo tribe. The Gedeo people, they especially worship this evil spirit. But in their history, they have this, in their culture, they have this creator god that they call Mag Ano. But they don't worship him. He's just so distant and removed that this evil spirit is more present and more powerful and more fearful, and so they worship him. But this man, Warasa, he begins to be burdened. He wants to know more about Mag Ano, this creator god. And so he begins to pray to Mag Ano that he will somehow reveal himself to him. This is their name for their creator god, for the creator god. And he somehow gets this understanding that there are going to be two men that are going to come to his village, the village of Dila, and they're going to set up camp under this big sycamore tree on the edge of his town. And so he waits 8 years. He's praying, waiting. Well, you circle the globe and you're in Canada and it's 1948. And there are two men that have a burden for the Gedeo people in Ethiopia. And they go over to Ethiopia and they're wondering, okay, how do we go about this? Where do we start? And their first thought is, well, let's just start in the middle. You know, we're going to start in the middle and work our way out and reach the whole tribe. And they get advice. They say, no, if you do that, they're going to kick you out. So what you should do is start on the edge and just kind of worm your way in. And they're, okay, that sounds like good advice. So they travel to the area of the Gedeo tribe, and on the edge of this tribal area is this village of Dila. Say, why don't we start here at Dila? So, okay, where should we set up camp? What about that big sycamore tree? That's a great place to have shade. Let's set up camp there. And they set up camp under this big sycamore tree. And this guy, Warasa Wanga, is watching them. And this man, Warasa, is one of the very first converts in that village. This is how God works. And this isn't even just, you know, in books that people write or places like that. I had a student in the Philippines. His name was Roley. You can find him on LinkedIn. Roley was one of our students there for years. Just a godly layman, construction foreman. And Roley tells his story. He says he was in a spiritist movement in the Philippines. And he one day he got on a jeepney. And have you been, anybody seen a jeepney? Been in the Philippines? Anybody ridden out a jeepney? Okay, so it's, you know, you have like these two benches, right? And you can fit eight people on each side, you know, plus about 10. And, you know, there's always room for one more. You know, you can always put one more person. You can stand on the back even, which is even more fun than sitting. And anyway, so the jeepney pulls up and Rolly gets in the jeepney, sits down, and he prays something like this. I don't remember the exact, but he's just like, oh, God. He says, I don't even know if you exist. I don't even know who you are. I don't know what. I don't know anything. But I just know this. God, I'm empty. I'm at the bottom. I need help. And the jeepney, so jeepneys run a route, and there's on the side of the jeep, it tells you where it starts and where it ends and then where it goes in the middle. And so you kind of know where it goes. It just runs this route. And so it starts and stops anywhere in the route. And so the jeepney lurches to a stop, you know, and a guy gets on the jeepney. And it's a student from our Bible college in the Philippines. And one of his burdens is to pass out gospel tracts to the people on jeepneys. And he gives a gospel tract to this guy, Rolly. And Rolly has no idea what this is. You know, he's never seen one of these in his entire life. You know, he looks at it and he turns it over. And on the back is the name of a church, Gospelite. We would say Baptist, Gospelite Baptist Church. And he has no idea what a Baptist church is. But he's like, I'm going to go there. And he goes there on Sunday and he hears the gospel and he gets saved. And then he enrolls in our Bible college. And he takes Bible classes. He can be a better construction foreman and have better Bible studies with his workers. But this is how God works. And I share this because I want to encourage us to greater levels of obedience. How do you know that you are not the answer to somebody's prayer? How do you explain where God is burdening some of you to go? I talk to some of you and you're like, you know, I'm like, how did you get a burden for there? And sometimes you really can't say. But what if you are an answer like to a Warasa Wonga? What if you're the answer to somebody's prayer? And there's somebody in another place or country or people group and they're crying out and they're saying, God, I don't even know if you exist. I don't know who you are, but I need help. What if you're the answer to that person's prayer? You better obey. But it doesn't have to be around the world. What if you're the answer to somebody's prayer here? I worked with a colleague. He's in his, I think, early 70s at this point. But he tells his story of salvation. He was starting as a freshman at Clemson University, South Carolina. And it's a Saturday night before he ends up at the dorms on Monday. And he walks out of a bar on Saturday night and he looks up at the sky and he says, I don't have a clue what life is about. Monday, he's on campus, he's in his dorm room, and Monday night he gets a knock on his door. He opens the door and there's a soul winner there. And the guy shares the gospel, tries to talk, and my colleague, he just blows him off. It's like, I'm religious, I mean, I go to Sunday school, I mean, I've even taught Sunday school, I'm fine, just leave me alone. I'm fine, goodbye. And the man, before he leaves, he says something like this. He says, you know, you really need to have a Bible reason why you know that you're okay, why you know you're saved. And the door shuts and the soul winner walks off. And my friend said that statement just haunted him. And he couldn't get away from it. And that led him to salvation. That soul winner has no idea to this day what happened. He assumes that somebody, a Clemson college kid, blew him off. He has no idea that that last statement was the statement that haunted his soul and brought him to Christ. And again, how, you know, we've got to move to greater levels of obedience. How do you know you're not the answer to somebody's prayer? You're on an airplane, you know, you've got an empty seat. You're like, oh, this is great. I get an empty seat. And then somebody gets transferred next to you. How do you know that person wasn't transferred there by God? How do you know that person earlier that morning didn't say, God, I don't even know if you exist. I don't even know what to think. I don't even know truth. I can't find it on Google. I can't find it on AI. I don't know what's true. And they end up next to you on a plane. What if it's a new neighbor? Neighbor moves in. It's not just people shuffling residences or realty market or whatever. What if that's God? What if behind a very successful looking person has everything together? His car's nicer than yours. House is nicer than, everything's nicer than yours. But what if behind closed doors there's a broken heart, a shattered life, a guilty conscience? And behind closed doors, it's just, God, I don't even know anything. What if God put them there for you, and you're the Philip or the Peter or the Paul, who's going to be the obedient feet to speak words by which they will be saved? You know, our obedience is important. I don't know about you, but I don't want it just to be other people God uses. It's like, Lord, let me be the two Canadian men. Let me be the Phil. Let me be the Paul. Let me be the feet. Let me be the mouth that speaks words by which they will be saved. So what about those who've never heard? Well, number one, it's technically not true that nobody's ever heard. They have heard some knowledge of God. And the general pattern is as they push it away for unrighteous reasons. So what about those who, you know, by the grace of God, they follow light that they've been given? The biblical pattern is God sends an obedient messenger to give them more light, to open his or her mouth and speak words by which they will be saved.